Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
The issue of students. Maisie, good afternoon to you.
Hiya.
Good. You're president of the Students' Union in NUIG.
I am indeed, yeah.
So you're busy, you're kind of out in a kind of a canvas yourselves at the moment, handing out flyers and collaring commuters down at the train station, pressing the flyers into their hands, asking them to do what?
Yeah, trying to do our best to get some more rooms for students. The university have already, you know, had the best stab at it. They've dropped leaflets around to loads of houses in the cities. So now we're trying to catch the commuters on our side as well. So yeah, really any rooms going for students, we're urging people to pop them up on student pads.
So
will be able to make it to college.
You were probably out last year, I take it. It's an elected position and you were probably flyering people. So you're probably a dab hand at pressing paper into people's hands and trying to get them to make commitments for votes last year, probably. But this time it's to commit a room. How are you getting on? What kind of a response are you getting?
Well, this is a little more difficult because when I was running for election, I baked 900 brownies, and people are a little bit more receptive when you're giving away free brownies. But we're still having some success, and they'd already had success from the university campaign of dropping them into people's doors and things. So we're seeing more and more rooms going up on student pad, which is great.
And are people aware of the incentives for the rent-a-room scheme, the fact that they can earn around 14,000 tax-free if they do rent a room in their house, or are you having to inform them of that? What are you detecting on that front?
I suppose some people have been doing it for years. You know, they're a dab hand at the whole digs thing. But yeah, there's people who maybe just have children who've moved away to college themselves, or don't need such a big house anymore. Who wouldn't have thought of it? Who wouldn't have even considered it a possibility? You know, if they're not, they wouldn't consider themselves landlords as such. So yeah, there's people who have never heard about it and never heard about the scheme that are hopefully signing up now.
Right, but obviously the colleges sending out of leaflets to people around Galway looking for them to opt into this hasn't produced the numbers for accommodation that you'd like. So what is the state of play for the student population in Galway at the moment? And I suppose bear in mind, you're not the only college in the town. You have GMIT, there's probably people on further education courses as well as people working and everything else. There's a fair bit of competition for rental places in the town, in the city, should I say.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's not just, it's not just a Galway issue and it's not just a student issue, it is a housing crisis all over the country. But speaking on behalf of the students in the University of Galway, it is pretty dire. It was dire when I was coming in first year, like 4 or 5 years ago. And, it's still dire now and possibly even getting worse as we see a rise in illegal Airbnbs and this type of stuff. So
really, that's a real pinch point for Galway, because it's a massively attractive tourist city and a tourist area in general. So the short lets are hitting what might have once been student accommodation hard, are they?
Yeah, it's just more appealing to, I suppose landlords who are really in it for the money, it can be more appealing to them because they can make more, it's a little bit more work, but you're making so much more profit off of it.
And ballpark, what are you talking about expense-wise? I mean, I think you've lived on campus yourself and you've lived off campus. So overall, what's the kind of difference in cost that you're looking at there?
It totally depends on if you get lucky, if you get a landlord, who's been in it and really cares about students. Maybe they had, children themselves. Our landlady had children who went to college in Galway, and we're only paying $530 now for a lovely house, really good rooms. But before, I was paying $700 for a tiny room, and they were asking us to pay 6 months rent at a time, So it can change. And then you hear of people paying $800 for twin rooms, and it could be anywhere, up to $1,200 for just a room.
And when you say 6 months rent at a time, as in $4,200 up front, and then the next 6 months you had to go for the full 12 months, did you? There was no 9 month letter.
We were basically told, if you want the house, you pay 6 months rent right now or else we'll sign someone who will. So yeah, pretty tough. And you're vulnerable students who don't really have anywhere else to go. So, and I suppose they know that.
And for people who are, pledging rooms or want to source a student to live in a room through the college, do you have a kind of a bare minimum of things that they have to agree to, you know, use of the kitchen or size of room or anything? Or is it this stage, is it fairly just desperate, any room, anywhere, any way?
Yeah, I mean, they all have to be approved. Like, once you put in all your details, whether it's a 5-day rent, a 7-day rent, you know, where it is, how much the rent's going to be, and then you can put that into StudentPad and your own personal details, and then the accommodation office of the university will, you know, look at it and approve it. So if there's anything, you know, if someone is trying to charge a million trillion euro for a single box room with no kitchen access, you know, I don't know what the actual requirements are, but I'm sure they'd flag it, yeah.
All right, you stay with us, Maisie, because we have Ruan O'Callaghan on the other line now. Ruan, good afternoon to you.
Hiya.
You're in Galway, so you're very aware of what's going on. How's the hunt at the moment?
So the hunt at the moment for me has thankfully ended. I have found accommodation with a very nice man and all that, but from the past few months, I can tell you that I'm pretty sure everyone has the same experience. It has not been great.
Right. So just to say, you're a second year, is it marine science student? In Galway, and you've been on the hunt probably, what, since all summer, have you?
February. I was looking since February and really looking since late May, early June. And I want to clarify, earlier on the 12 o'clock show...
Yeah, no, I hold my hands up. I said that we had somebody who was, you know, who had been in a house for 600 euro a month with no access to the kitchen. And it was actually something that was advertised for 650 euro a month, but you yourself had not stayed there.
Yes, that
you'd
was
seen
me.
And rejected. Yeah, my apologies for that.
I started with no money.
No, you didn't tell us that. That was my mistake. And I wouldn't like to do down your reputation as a discerning room hunter there. But tell us about that ad, you know, that you obviously didn't go for it, but what were the terms and conditions of it?
Yeah, so basically this was after I'd actually gone to a lovely other woman's house in Knocknacar, and I just didn't take in the end because I felt I couldn't. But thankfully the accommodation office in Galway, they're amazing people. I was given a viewing that day. And I had to go back to Waterford. I'm from Waterford, and I had to go back up to Galway the next day. But
you went down to Waterford, and back to Galway the next day. How long did that take?
A lot longer than most people would think. It took. I was in Galway for about 4 hours the next day. So that was, and the rest of it was travelling. So that would be over about maybe 6 hours or 7 hours of travelling.
Right, yeah.
And also I was working in Waterford, so I couldn't really get up to Galway to go to viewings and all that. And I'm sure international students have it even worse with that sort of problem, because I wouldn't like to take place without viewing it.
Right.
Especially, you know, I hadn't viewed this place yet, and then when I did, you know...
Us through it.
The land person was very nice, right? I have to get that out of the way first. You know, they showed me a room, it had an ensuite, it was had a sink in it. There's two lovely dogs in the house. But I was denied the room because a couple of days later she got back to me and she said, oh, sorry, room is not available. And that is okay. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days after that, the room had become available again. And I was also told near enough to the viewing that possibly there wouldn't be like such thing as a kitchen downstairs, and there'd be a microwave and a fridge. But I was told, if you want to take this place, there is a microwave that I could source and a fridge that I could source, keyword being could there, and no kitchen access.
No access to the kitchen. And do you mind me asking, would it have been a 7-day or a 5-day let?
7-day.
Seven-day let, okay.
Since I'm from Waterford, I can't actually properly live in Galway unless I have a 7-day a week accommodation, because I need to work as a student to earn money for the accommodation for life and everything else.
And were you told what the logic was behind denying you access to the kitchen?
I don't think I'm at liberty to comment on that.
Okay, that's
but
fine.
I had I'd imagine it would just be that it's private, and that's completely understandable. But for someone who is an international student, for example, who can't get here, and maybe not this place really, but like a different place, if a different place is offering a higher price, 7 day week, and they said no kitchen access after the person had paid, that would be incredibly, incredibly dangerous. Because basically you're eating out every single day. You're eating out of microwaves in the university, which the university gladly have, and I think that's a great amenity for everyone in Galway.
Sure, but the cost alone of having to eat out or buy microwavable meals, I mean, it's probably not great diet-wise, and it's certainly not great pocket-wise.
No, not at all.
All right. Just hang on a second, room, because I want to go back to Maisie on this. Maisie, is this common where people would offer a room with no access to the kitchen?
Yeah, I've definitely heard about it happening. It's crazy, kind of the disparity between, you know, like the ideal digs. Like, what, I have a VP for Gaeilge in the office. Like, her landlady just baked her a cake for her birthday, you know? And then at the other end of the spectrum, we have people who are expected to make no noise after 8 p.m. and you're not allowed in the kitchen and you must be gone by 12 o'clock on Friday, you know? So it really is just luck of the draw.
Right. And just, no, I suppose they're trying to have the benefit of both, where have the student in the house but not really see know about the presence of the student.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's just a mouse in the corner. Now, it's not to say that they really are some really good digs people out there, and I think especially people who have, you know, had kids themselves or think the house is a little bit quiet can really benefit from it.
Alright, so Ruan, you got a house, and so you're set up for next year. I was just struck, though, by saying that you've been looking since February. So obviously you could see that your accommodation was going to come to an end at the end of last academic year. And you were already hunting to set yourself up for September, October this year.
Yeah, I also want to clarify that I made the stupid mistake of not putting in my application to all the off-site student accommodations before the deadline. That is primarily something that, you know, hindered me quite a bit.
Right.
But it was purely from, I'd say, just lack of knowledge, and kind of I was too busy doing society events and being involved in the student union and all that to actually remember to put in the applications.
Right. Were you running in the election yourself?
I was, yes.
Right. How'd you get on?
I got third, so okay. I was quite happy with it. And my two competitors were amazing. Of course, the last year, Tona Guelga, currently, Rachel Onya, she's great, and I can't wait for her term in the administration office. I don't know.
Well, but that's very magnanimous of you. But what ballpark figure, what would you be looking at for, you know, official campus affiliated accommodation?
I was talking to some of my friends and they said about 700 for a single room, 745, I think. And then if you were going to, I think it's I'm pretty sure it's Westwood, they would give you the room for 10,000 a year.
10,000
I personally would not have those types of funds, and it put a lot of pressure on me to do that. And I'm sure, again, with international students, they would have a harder time with that sort of cost, because they're already paying a lot for their course and also coming over here and leaving their families and so on and so forth.
Well, look, if there is anybody out there who is a parent who is on the hunt at the moment or has concerns about accommodation, or indeed is a student looking for accommodation at the moment, you can get us on 087-484-8888 and give us your perspective on that. You can text us as well on 51551. If you're considering renting a room in your house but you have some reservations about it, you'll ring in and tell us what they are. Also, you can get us on those numbers, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps. Or if you have had experience of having a student in your house and you'd like to either recommend or issue a cautionary tale, you can contact us there as well. Maisie, what's the ballpark figure on other campus accommodation? Is it in and around the 10,000 mark that Ruan was talking about there, or is it to be got any cheaper?
Carib, so there's three on-campus accommodations, and then there's more student-specific purpose-built accommodations around the city. And on-campus, it does range. Like, Carib is fairly basic prices, and then up to Dunlin, which is more expensive and more luxury ensuite double bed accommodation. So it just depends.
For 10,000 on accommodation alone, before you even pay your what we expect potentially to be a 3,000 euro registration fee, plus the cost of anything else to survive.
And then
it's hefty, isn't it?
Students aren't supported. Yeah, students aren't supported by their parents if they're funding themselves through college. You know, there's if you work every month, every day during the summer, and then continue to work every weekend, you know, you still are just scraping by. So it just, you know, and it's really
it's
hard.
A lot of hours behind a till or on your feet behind a bar or waiting tables in a cafe.
Yeah, for sure.
To be paying that kind of a bill.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just out of the range of a lot of people, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it totally depends. You know, I could be doing the same course. My parents could be getting paid the same as my neighbour. But, you know, her parents think that she should be self-funding her way through college. And she's not getting any support from Susie because they're considering her parents' wages in it. And then my parents are happy to help me. And, you know, we're getting Susie. And, you know, it just... Yeah, you know, it just totally depends on the luck of the draw, really.
Okay, Ruin, if there's anybody else listening out there and they are a property owner and they're kind of humming and hawing about potentially letting a room to a student, I mean, based on your own experience as a well-behaved, active student who's productively engaged in student activities and student politics, which is shorthand for basically, I'll never be in, you know, make the pitch to a prospective landlord or digs host for hosting students. What's the positive pitch on it?
Yeah, so I'd say, look, if you are thinking of providing a student place, you are providing a lifeline for a student coming to Galway who might not have it beforehand. And also, they would be quite appreciative right now of a student place, as there aren't many going, and you'd be hard pressed to find someone who wouldn't act you know, nice and neat if they got that accommodation like around now, because the search has been quite arduous for a lot of people. I have a friend in France who is having a bit of trouble getting here with accommodation. So I'd say, if you're looking to house people, definitely do so.
Okay.
And you could even end up making a good friend.
Okay, Maisie, do you want to make a similar pitch? Because you've been down at the train station pressing the flesh, giving your 30-second pitch to commuters. What are the positives? What are the benefits to Galway? What kind of an intercultural, life-enhancing experience could a potential house owner have in offering a room to a student?
Well, I think you put it very well yourself there. Life-enhancing experience, for sure, you know. The people are the blood and the heart of Galway, and students can't go to college if they don't have anywhere to live, you know. So whether you decide to put that room up on studentpad.ie might be the line between a student coming to college and not coming to college. And hopefully they will be lovely and tidy, and you will be able to earn tax-free for the rest of your days.
All right. All right, well, Gunari Livlish and Dr. Shin in Galiv, and the best of luck to any other students' unions and prospective students around the country. We do absolutely want to hear from anyone who has any questions about this, and, you know, if they want to put out there what their experience has been, if they want to recommend it, if they have had experience in the past, if they're on the hunt for it, if they're a worried parent, if you want to, I suppose, just put it out there that you're considering it and make the pitch to students, or vice versa. 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps, 51551 for your texts. Have a think about it, because we're going to take a break. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818-715-815.
Daniela McSorley, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. You're very good to talk to us. People might know you from TikTok. You're Daniela McSorley, and you're on Instagram as well. You're Danielle_SorleyX. But you've decided you need to go public about something that you've heretofore kept hidden in your life. What is it that you wanted to talk to us today about?
So one of my biggest insecurities is that I have alopecia, but people wouldn't see it. It's underneath my hair, and I've had it from I was 11.
And how was it discovered?
So whenever I was at the hairdressers, it was around the time I was doing exams in primary school, I went to the hairdressers and they discovered like a coin-sized bald piece in my hair and brought my mum over to see it. And it was kind of brushed off like, oh, look, it's stress, it'll go away. But this was awful for me because my nickname at the time was Pocahontas because I had really long dark hair and I was like, oh no, my hair, what if it all falls out? But there wasn't really much information about it at that stage. That was what? Oh, I'm not good at maths. I'm 11. What am I,
22 years ago.
Yeah, there you go. You can do the maths.
Not at all. Yeah, that's. I have the advantage of sitting in studio with a pen and paper. So if you want to throw out any more sums to challenge me over the course of the interview, fire away
here,
and do it. Nothing too complex,
know.
Please.
I wouldn't know if you got it right. You could tell me anything.
Ah, now come on. You went back to college, and I think you did very well in a business course. Don't be playing down your many talents.
Well.
Anyway, you found out you had alopecia age 11, and you didn't know anything about it. Did you go away and look it up, and did it worry you what you found out?
No, to be honest, I'm not sure if it's just the culture up here. Whenever I was that age, but at that stage, it was very much like, you don't talk about things like that, as in, oh, it'll be fine, don't worry about it, don't talk about it. So, for example, the same when I was in primary school, if somebody had head lice, it was, look, we don't talk about that, don't tell your friends because they'll make fun of you. Or I know whenever we went to swimming lessons in school, I don't know if you know verrucas in your foot,
oh, yeah.
You had to wear a white sock, and it was, oh, just don't go to school that day instead of having to embarrass yourself and wear the white sock. So, to be honest, it was just, look, covered as best you can, and hopefully it goes away.
And did that work? I mean, you said it was about a coin-sized patch when you were 11.
Yeah.
How long did that kind of work for you as a strategy?
So it's worked to this point, but I'll tell you what way it went. So at 11, I had that, and then it grew back. It did. And the next time I had a bald piece was when I was about in my early 20s, I'm going to say. I got it whenever I had my second daughter, so maybe mid-20s, early 20s, and it basically has been there ever since. Now, it got even worse. It just stayed, and it's always been the back bottom of my hair. It's hopefully it is never that way, but it's never been that visible that I couldn't cover it. So then, as you said there, I'd done my degree after we had a couple of children, and we decided to have our third in the middle of it. That maybe didn't help, but I'd done my degree at about, what year was that, 2019?
Okay.
6 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was awful. Now, in the video I put up on TikTok, it shows, like, I never showed that to anybody. I just decided to show it. And it was awful at that point. Maybe encouraged from stress, I'm not sure.
What did you have at that stage? You had, was it 3 kids and you were in college at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly see where the stress would be coming from anyway.
I didn't help myself, did I? And then, so that got a bit better. I still could hide it. Like, I'm laughing. I looked earlier on at my graduation photo and it looks like I have lovely, thick, long hair, which I do have long, thick enough hair, but obviously there's missing bits. And covered that, was able, nobody knew, very few people, apart from maybe my parents and my family. Now, the biggest, scariest part was if you were out and about, you know, if the wind blew.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think people would think of that unless they have it. I would be like touching the back of my hair. Or, for example, if you sat behind me at a wedding or something, I would constantly be playing and fixing my hair thinking, oh, they're going to see that ball patch. There was no such thing then that I knew of like, I know now there's like sprays for, you know, dark colours to cover your skin and stuff. So basically since then it grew back, but I've always had at least one bald patch.
But it, as you say, it seems to be something that you would have been a constant fear and a constant consciousness.
Constant,
as you know, I could imagine, just even as you say it there with your hand kind of going up to check. It's kind of nearly like a vicious circle. Stress
really
exacerbates
is,
it, and then you're left with the stress of trying to hide it.
And then it felt even more of, I felt like an imposter because everybody always said how nice, you know, when somebody looks at somebody, it's like, she has lovely hair, she has lovely long hair. And it made me even more insecure because I felt like my hair was my security blanket because it's what was pointed out first about me. I was like, what if I lose that? I'll not be me anymore.
And did people, I mean, you're active on social media. That's where the team here saw your TikTok video and were kind of admiring your courage to go public about it. But other people must have seen your other videos before this, did people, you know, give you positive feedback on your hair online or through your social media channels already?
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely. So my, I don't know what you know about my channel, but it started, I properly started posting in December, and it was mainly things like I was pregnant again. So I'd done day in the life of, we obviously have a big family. We have six children now, and that's not as common these days. So whenever I was an active scroller, and I never seen like people with big families my age, so I started doing day in the life. At that stage, it was day in the life of me as a 32-year-old
Great.
Pregnant mum of five.
Yeah. Well, that's easy maths to do. Five girls plus one boy equals six. Yeah, great.
Go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And our wee man has special needs, so I also do videos on that now, to the extent that I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
It's the same way we're talking about alopecia. That's another journey where, you know, you get a diagnosis, you go through a whole process of maybe not wanting to talk, and now I feel a bit better talking about it within our boundaries, and I give maybe some videos on activities and sensory ideas and things that have helped us.
Right. What age is he?
I don't really say what age he is.
No,
but
that's
he's
fine.
Not a teenager yet.
Right. Okay. And how's he keeping?
He's a wee darling. He is at a special needs school, so he's very, very good. And you know what? He brings a new aspect to our life. Like before that, I don't know what way you think, but whenever I'm a millennial, and whenever I was growing up, it was very much, the goal was perfection. The goal was, you know, achieve as much as you can achieve and do it perfectly. So whenever, as I say, doing that degree, you say that's a lot. I was like, let's tick on more. Let's go to the gym. Let's, you know, we had our children young, so I need to prove that I can still get the degree. And then when our wee man came along, it just showed me that, look, life can take a turn. The path you were going down, it can change. So you need to change with it. You know what I mean? Life's not perfect. So I think it's just a progression to now. Whenever I've worked with a makeup brand to do with Get Ready With Me's and stuff like that, and now their sister company, a hair brand that I love, contacted me to work with them, and I was like, all I felt was imposter syndrome. That's why I talked about it, because
right.
My page, I try to do, you know, what younger me, it's nearly healing for me. It's like what younger me needed to hear, what my daughters or my son, I would like them to hear, and then what I just like doing. So
okay, so you want to kind of bust this perfection bubble, and alopecia was your way into that, and updating people on the kind of day-to-day normal life, the ups and downs of being the young mother of six kids that, you know, life is complex, shades of grey, don't concentrate on the perfection, just get on and live the most positive life you can live. Is that kind of what your socials are about?
Pretty much. I think Instagram back in the day was very curated and highlight reels, and I just couldn't fit into that. And now TikTok, I think I go on TikTok looking worse than I do in real life, because I'm like, I find comfort in watching other people on the same path as me or a different path, and I can appreciate what they're doing. And I don't want somebody to come on my page and go, oh, it's okay for her, or everything's going well, whenever we all have things that we maybe don't talk about or aren't in a position to talk about.
And how has that been for you, the day-to-day social media updates? I mean, once you had the courage to talk about one thing, did it kind of give you the courage to talk about something else and something else and something else and so on?
Yeah.
Do you find it's kind of enhanced your life and the anxiety that you felt before? Has that dialed down at all?
Colm, what I tell everybody, and my husband Connor and my mum and daddy have said, they've never seen me as happy. I just thrive now in being me. And I think I grew up in a generation where it was, you know, you can only be successful or be accepted for being really educated or doing really well in business. And people accepting you for who you are and following you and supporting you is, God, I'm getting emotional. It's lovely.
No, it's okay. Take your time, yeah. And, you know, yeah.
I love opening up. Like, for example, there, we just did our sixth baby, and I was breastfeeding her, and then I stopped because it just was too much for her family. And you're going to have, I keep calling them bad eggs. It's not like I've gone on and got a lot of support. I don't want people to think, oh, you'll go online, and if you get any troll comments, that you should come off it. Everybody has that. They have positive comments, they have troll comments. I want to do things that I think I would have needed to see. For example, stopping feeding. I had a lot of people writing going, thank you so much. The guilt I feel around stopping, but to see that it's okay for you, you know, it's okay for all of us to do that. And the same with our SEN journey, the same with, now this is how our natural progression to alopecia. I'm going, no, I'm going to talk about this. It makes me very insecure, but I feel I'll not stay under the weight of this insecurity, as ironic as it is, the weight and me with lighter hair, but I want to be me, and I can still work with, for example, hair care companies. I still have hair here. I still, if I had a wig, I could still, you know, they need treatment too. you can still do life even when it's thrown things at you that you thought would maybe knock you down.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure you're 100% right. There are, you know, maternity hospitals and public health nurses who put the message out there about the benefits of breastfeeding and everything else. It doesn't work out for some people. And so I suppose the message is everywhere in maternity hospitals, and it's a vulnerable time when people have had a new child. They may want to just, it may not be for them, it may not have worked out for them, but the feelings of guilt that they may feel as a result of that.
And that's the thing, even when you look at your hair journey and you think the feelings of guilt, why is my hair falling out? There's no, like for example, Colm, there's no cause. Nobody can say what the cause of alopecia is. That's what I think the hardest. I always say I suffer from alopecia. I have a thyroid problem. I don't say I suffer from that, because for alopecia, I think I suffer from it because I don't know why it's happening to me. People can only give me ideas. For example, they'll say stress and you'll go, well, I don't know. I'm stressing about the stress of you telling me it's from that. Then the cure, there is no cure. It's an autoimmune condition in my case. So you're going, okay, well, what's the cure? They can give you now, I have seen there's a new treatment out. It's a oral inhibitor, I think, but I've been pregnant that many years now that I haven't got a break to try any of them.
Okay.
So I know there is potential things that can help, and you need to keep hope. But I think that's what's really hard about it is, you know, there's scenarios where, like the ideal scenario, everybody would breastfeed their child. The ideal scenario, you'd have a full head of hair. The ideal scenario, if we have a sand child, we know exactly what to do to help them. But life isn't that linear. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I like. I like to follow people and see things that, okay, I'm going down this path. It's not the path I wanted, but does anybody else have any experience of this?
Yeah, I'm struck by what you're saying there. You know, you're out on social media and you're doing the best you can to kind of just maybe scrub away some of the varnish that's on social media elsewhere.
Yeah.
You're speaking about alopecia and everything else, and you're talking about the enormous benefits of it, which, you know, you don't often hear about social media. But then you also say there are people there as well who are knockers. And, you know, the fact that you can push through this, I mean, on that front, coming out publicly about your alopecia, I mean, do you even get people making sneery comments about your decision to come out and talk about that?
Oh, definitely. In general, just doing social media, I think, like, I don't know many people my age with six children, and like, I have teenage daughters, and them and my husband are my biggest cheerleaders. Like, people go, are your children not embarrassed? No, they are so supportive of me. In fact, the reason I started working with a makeup brand is what my videos started going to get ready with me using my daughter's makeup, because they had better makeup than me, even after Christmas coming around and things like that. So they were the ones going, why don't you do a video on this? So I look at them and go, see, anything anybody says to me, I'm going, I have the best support network. My children support me. They're happy with what I'm doing. My husband couldn't be more supportive. And I'm going, somebody needs to break through the mold of that and try their best. Now, I'm not saying my pages are all negative things or things. Like, I'm just doing what I like to do, and I've never felt happier in what I'm doing.
Yeah, and that's social media. That's the jungle you happen to be walking through. And did your kids know you had alopecia before this, or did, you know, was that something you'd kept private from them? Yeah.
My oldest girl did, but my second daughter, Bella, says, oh, I might be going on the radio today. How cool is that? She goes, why? And I go to talk about alopecia, and she goes, you have alopecia? And it made me really sad. She said that to me in the kitchen. I went, well, I thought you knew. And then I thought, right enough, my default is cover your hair. Do you think, like, people have commented to me online, oh, I thought your hair was your security blanket. You're always playing with it. You don't really wear your hair up. And I'm like, oh, people notice. It is my thing to just default cover it. Like, we talk about our inner child and, you know, that's my default is, now, do you remember you when you were younger, you had a cover it, so you need to keep covering it. So to come out and say that's one of my biggest insecurities was probably, like, my husband didn't even know I was going to do it. Nobody did. The brand I was working with after that didn't know. I just thought, no, I need to do this for me and for other people like me.
And would you go a step further and actually wear hairstyles that exposed the exposed patch? Or, you know, are you just happy to be open about it and still style your hair in a way that covers that up?
No, well, if I wanted to wear my hair that way, I would. But, like, I like my hair down. And the way I like wearing my hair, fortunately for me, is you can't see it. But I would completely encourage people to wear their hair whatever way they want. Because, you know, life's too short to cover up and not be who you are. You know what I mean? If you want to wear your hair in a bun and you have bald patches at the back, at least if there's people like me coming out and saying, look, I have them too. Here's the photos. Look, I may not wear my hair like this, but that's what it looks like underneath.
And have you
had it? I think it's still important to be yourself.
Have you had any contact from other people since you started talking about alopecia? Have you had any other contact from other people who have alopecia or who, as you put it yourself, suffer with alopecia, kind of reaching out to you in a direct message and saying, I'm in this boat too?
Oh, you wouldn't believe, Colin. Like, not only just some people are confident enough, you have to remember there's levels of this. So some people, the same way when I was talking about being a SEN parent, people are at different stages of their journey and acceptance rates and things like that. So I have people in my comments say things and people private message and say things like, which I didn't even know myself, to be honest. Like their children, maybe their five-year-old girl who's got lovely hair all of a sudden has bald patches, and she watched my video and how happy she was to see somebody that's on social media like that. And, oh, you'd be crying. You don't prepare yourself for the response you might get. Like, when I put up that video, I just closed it and was like, I can't look at it for a while because I feel insecure. You know, that wee young girl feeling comes up again. But when I went back on, I was like crying to my husband going, it's so nice. I wish I had somebody like that when I was younger to say, look, it's okay. It's okay. It's not, you don't have to accept it. Like, it's not, as I said, I suffer from alopecia. I can't control it. I don't enjoy it. I'm not happy I have it. But if I can help somebody else to go, look, somebody else has it as well. They don't like it, but, you know, we can still do life. We can still work with people we want to work with. We can still be happy.
Yeah, and like the emotional response of crying over it, do you think that's nearly a form of grief for all the years that you were anxious about it? You know, what is it that it's bringing up for you?
That's what I would say about even starting this journey from December to now, is I've never felt as happy in myself, because anything that I thought was an insecurity or I felt maybe was a weakness growing up, I just talk about it now. And then the positive response and the negative, that's just part and parcel of life. You're going to get that. But the positive response, you're going, I feel, it sounds silly, but I feel like I'm accepted. Like, younger me feels like, oh, you know, you should like you. Like, I'd love to, there was a trend going around TikTok, what would you say to your younger self? And that was so healing. Like, we can say so many negative things, and there is a lot of negative things about social media, but some parts of it are just absolutely beautiful and really, really, like, I'm so happy in what I'm doing and I'm happy that I can help other people. Yes, I'm a bit scared, like, opening up about alopecia, but, you know, it has to be done. If I can do it, and there's people that will never maybe get to the point that they want to talk about it, and that's okay too. You don't have to talk about it, but at least if some of us can, we can help the people that maybe don't want to use their voice because they're maybe mentally not coping okay with it.
Well, look, if there is any listeners out there who do feel they are ready to talk about it or feel they could help others by talking about it, so you can get us in touch by, or you get in touch with us by WhatsApp on 087-484-8888, or send us a text on 51551. Hang on a minute with us, Danielle, because we want to talk to Brenda. Okay. Brenda, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You also suffer with alopecia, if that's how you put it to yourself. How long have you had it?
I've had it, I was diagnosed 3 years ago last March.
And how did you discover it?
I got bald patches around the crown, just lower than the crown, above the ear on my hair. I've always had fine hair, loads of it. But I just started to get bald patches around the kind of middle part, small at first, and then they got wider. And I just found it so distressing, any kind of wind that would happen or blow the hair. I felt really exposed. It had a massive effect on my self-esteem. My hairline then started to get thin and around the sides. And the worse it got, the more it affected me. I've always been a confident and kind of outgoing person, and I was quite shocked at how insecure I felt.
Just from the time that you began to notice the missing patches, it just had a corrosive effect on your confidence over time, did it?
Completely, completely. And it's just a feeling of being completely and utterly exposed. It felt like being naked. That was the closest thing that it was like as if I had been stripped and that I'd was losing myself, because I didn't look like myself any longer.
And you heard Danielle talking about, you know, she was checking for the patch, and anytime somebody would sit behind her and she was very conscious of it, there was a kind of a constant checking tendency going on with her. Did you find yourself in the same boat, or did you develop kind of strategies to hide it?
Both, completely initially. Completely, and to the point where I'd second guess myself whether I should go out what will I say if people ask what's wrong with me or what's happened to me or whatever? Because I actually didn't know what was happening myself. I was quite stressed. I was going through a divorce, and I also I'd had COVID, and it was just it was a vulnerable time. It was in the middle of COVID as well, so it was really isolating. Totally isolating, and nobody else understanding how you were feeling, because COVID had kind of swallowed everybody into a void of feeling the same way about different things. Everybody was going through a period of a very unusual time, and then also the fact that you couldn't meet with people and you know behave normally, but was both a good thing and a bad thing. In that you didn't have people to meet and show and get some kind of solace from. Mm. But it was also good in that you were able to stay home and you were able to hide it longer. So then if that became an issue...
Yeah, what's the point at which you then leave and reveal what's been affecting you?
Well, for me, I just went mad into research online and looking at what the causes were and also what the solutions were. And I ended up ordering a topper online from Australia.
What's a topper?
And that was a topper is a it's kind of a semi wig. It's a cap, a bit like a Pope cap, with hair on it, and you can clip it. It has snap clips built into the underneath of it, and it clips to the hair that you have under that. It kind of snaps. They're a very tight grip on them, and they have a rubber seal. So it just it doubles the size of your hair. It thickens it for you. And it also gives you some stability on top if that's where you're exposed. Lots of people wear toppers. You would never know when somebody's wearing
a topper. Is it comfortable or uncomfortable? How is it to wear?
It initially was very comfortable for me, but because my hair was very fine and I was still losing, it became really uncomfortable. It was great for about 2 months. And my daughter was getting married, and she had her hen party, and I was able to go and feel like myself again for the 2 months. But as the wedding approached, and as I lost more hair, and as the clips were clipping onto the same pieces of hair each time that I wore it, which was every day,
right,
that was weakening the hair in those areas. So they were becoming more exposed and joining the circle.
So you've got the general environmental stress of COVID, you're developing alopecia, you're going through a divorce, and you've got a wedding on top of that with all of the kind of image consciousness that comes. Like, I mean, between the two of you, I mean, Danielle with, you know, three kids at this point, she decides to take on a degree, which, by the way, she got a first in, so fair play to her on that. She's no slouch when she takes on the stress. But at the same time, Brenda, I'm just struck by... Like that is a mountain of worry to be carrying with you.
It was. It really, really was. It was very upsetting. And it was, that's not to say that I don't ever get upset. I do. But like, I get bored of myself quite quickly, that if I'm upset for any period of time, I kind of just get sick of myself.
I know, but that's quite kind of unforgiving, isn't it? Like to kind of nearly have that voice going, be quiet about it.
You know, get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, you do kind of have to be compassionate to yourself as well, though, don't you, to get through that sort of a period?
Well, I don't know. I think for me, that helped me get up and find a solution.
Okay.
So I went towards wigs, and I just thought, look, if this is where it is, and the time was running out, my daughter's wedding was coming up, and I was really worried. She was talking about a cinematographer. She was talking about a photographer. She not only had one wedding, she had two, one in Ireland and one abroad. And I was the mother of the bride. I'm going to be on every photograph, which I'm never that comfortable with anyway.
Okay.
So there was a lot of pressure coming. I was heading towards the waterfall, and wigs were going to be my salvation.
Okay. How did the wig journey go?
Well, I ordered another one from the place that I ordered them online in Australia, and it arrived, and the cap was like a shower cap. The most magnificent, beautiful blonde hair I've always dreamed of, like a newsreader's hair. And I was delighted. But what I realized when I walked around is that it looked like a shower cap from behind. It didn't fit me.
Okay.
One side was baggy, and you could actually pinch more than an inch and pull it out. So it kind of sat out in an awkward shape. So then I had a battle trying to get my money back from there, and it wasn't cheap. It was over €1,000. It was nearly 1,500. So, and then, as I said, I'm 2 weeks away from a wedding. So anyway, I actually found a company here in Dublin, and I went up to there and I offloaded all of my woes in there.
And when you went there, and as you say, you know, you offload your woes to them. I mean, how much of a difference does that make for people whose daily business is effectively dealing people in your own situation? It would probably seem totally normal and mundane to them, did it?
It can do. It can do in a kind of a shop situation. I was really lucky where I landed. It was private. It was a consultation room. I literally sobbed. I don't think she could understand me for probably half an hour. Everything that I'd been carried was just offloaded. The wedding had me up to 90. Not only the fact that I was in a divorce and I was going to be in front of a whole load of people with my soon-to-be ex, but also that my hair was gone and I didn't have a replacement. The replacement that I had paid a lot of money for didn't work. So I literally left my spleen on the table there. And this woman was incredible to me. She gave me 3 pieces. No money changed hands. She told me to go home and try them on with my outfits. Tell me if any of them worked. She measured my head, which is vital for people who have alopecia, because if you just go in and put on whatever, you will never feel comfortable in it. You'll feel like you're wearing an old sack. For it to be fitted correctly, you don't feel like you're wearing a wig. You don't feel like it's separate from your head. And that's vital in how comfortable you are and how confident you are and how well you feel. And I was just lucky. So I ended up taking 2 of the 3 pieces that she gave me and went off to the wedding. And if it wasn't for it, I don't know, I had a very different experience.
Nice. Good wedding.
To what would have happened. Great wedding. Great. Irish wedding and then a great foreign wedding.
And come here to me. I know, you know, there's the whole thing and you probably, you know, had outfits for the wedding and you got your wigs and everything else. But in the lead up to that, did you find, looking back, that there were strategies there to do the opposite to what you would have been doing at a wedding? Like, you know, you put an outfit on at a wedding to look your best. Did you kind of pick out more anonymous clothes that would deflect attention from you as you went through the stress with alopecia and all that was going on?
I wish I had, Colm. They were already bought while I had hair.
Okay.
And so, no, they weren't that discreet.
Okay. But I mean, day to day, you know, did it affect your wardrobe choice when you were going out on the street, you know, how you dressed and how you presented yourself if you didn't want the attention on your hair loss?
Initially, I didn't tell anybody. Initially, I kept my head down and I didn't talk to anybody about it apart from my daughter. She was the only person, the person who was getting married. So she was the only person who knew. And that's pretty much, and I picked hair that looked very like mine. It was longer and it was in better condition than mine was. But yes, I did all of that. But I've come full circle now. I have different wigs for different occasions. I have different colours. I go out in every type. I don't care who knows. I don't go advertising it. But if anybody asks, I tell them. If I'm in a mood to have the chat about it, I'll tell them. If I'm not, I'll say my niece does my hair.
Right.
I was telling the researcher that I was in a petrol station and like was going to the same petrol station for a couple of months. And the woman said to me, I had my hand on the door to leave. And she said, your hair is magnificent. Every time you come in here, I'm watching, looking at your hair. Now, I'd never had that in my entire life.
Okay.
So I just looked at her and went, oh, thanks. And I went to pull the door and continue going. And she said, actually, where do you get it done? I'd love to have my hair like that. And I had to think. I literally... First of all, an expletive came out in my own head.
Mm.
And then I go, what will I do? And then I just turned back to her and I said, actually, it's a wig. And she turned, the poor woman, she turned the colour of a raspberry. It was just the two of us in the petrol station. Mm. She was behind the till and my hands on the door to leave. And I said, well, don't be embarrassed. I said, I'm not. I said, I have now I'm in a situation where I've got the best hair that I've ever had. I pop it on. I'm out the door much faster. I can wear what I like. I feel 20 years younger, and it's been the making of me. So thanks.
Mm. But I suppose from where the woman in the petrol station is sitting, she could have thought she was breaching the subject of, say, a cancer diagnosis where there'd be hair loss. And, you know, maybe that's why people looking at alopecia who don't know what it is might also think, is that somebody who's in treatment? And what do I say here? You know, people who are cancer sufferers would say sometimes there's an awkwardness about that. where people just don't want to talk about the elephant in the room. And maybe that's something else that people with alopecia are unconsciously dealing with too.
100%. I actually work now in wigs, and we have half of our clients are actually women who are coming in dealing with cancer. And you've got an equal mix of people who say what they're wearing and people who don't. But I have noticed that there's less shame, because I think for most women, it's temporary. Some women are upset with losing their hair and feeling self-conscious, but most are more concerned with the illness that they're dealing with. And for us, what I have said to women who have been upset about losing their hair and that being an added hurt, as well as dealing with a serious illness, is what I said to them is that a wig will give you privacy. It will give you independence. You'll go to Tesco's with hair on, and nobody will know that what you're dealing with in relation to cancer. And you can share that with whom you choose.
Okay.
And hair gives you that choice. And it has worked for a lot of people that way.
And had you had anything to do with wigs in your life before, or has alopecia literally changed your career course?
It completely changed my career course, and I absolutely love it. I work 3 days a week. I have met the most beautiful women, going through the most incredible journeys. Mm. And I've also met kids as young as 5 with no hair, no eyelashes, no body hair, who've just developed alopecia. 13-year-olds who are going through puberty, the most sensitive time of your life, who have no hair and they're in first year or second year in school. It's a privilege. It's a privilege to deal with people who are going through that. And for me, it's just been, I don't know that I would have been able to deal with it as well if I hadn't gone through the experience myself and know how it feels.
Yeah, and you know, even in talking about it and highlighting some of those issues that I'm sure people would never think of, would never hear about, would never even be aware of. I mean, there must be people out there listening at the moment who are in that situation, or whose children who are in that situation, are very gratified to hear both of you at different points in your life talking about this.
100%. I've cried with clients. I've laughed with clients. And 9 times out of 10, there's a hug before they go. It's not about buying. I'm not on commission. I wouldn't work in a situation where I was on commission. It's both the owner and I have had, and the owner has had hair loss and I have alopecia. So it's not from a sales point of view. It's about making somebody feel as good as they can feel for what they can afford. And that's the journey. And explaining to them that it's with cancer, it's temporary. But with alopecia, you can make the journey as good as it can be. And once you throw off the shame, and that's not easy to do, but once you do, it's something that you can really enjoy, as your previous caller was saying. It's a journey that you can actually embrace and go forward, and just, like, none of us know how long we're here. We could be hit by a bus, we could be hit by illness, and just to not waste days in something that we didn't bring upon ourselves. Mm.
Well,
none
I think
Danielle
was saying that she would have liked somebody at 33 to speak to her 11-year-old self. You are slightly older than 33, Brenda. Yep. So, Danielle, what does it feel like to hear somebody at 61 dealing so positively with alopecia, and something that's resulted in an entire career change that, as Brenda says, is something that gives her fulfillment every day in helping other people?
Do you know what? It's absolutely beautiful. I was listening to that, getting teary. That was a full circle moment. This started and I was going, I feel so sorry for you. You're going through so, so much. And look what you've made it, a career and helping people. And that whole, the wig brings you privacy, that was beautiful. That is so beautiful, because a wee girl or boy going to school can go and don't have, that's the thing, you say the shame with it. You don't have to come out of the shame. If you have hair loss and you don't want to get over it, you don't want to accept it, you don't have to accept it. You can have the privacy of that wig, as you say. That's beautiful.
Right.
And people like me and you that are happy to talk about it, hopefully that brings them in the silence, that bit of reassurance that, look, everybody's going through something. Everything's not as it seems online or in real life. everybody has something, and if the people that can talk about it, isn't that lovely?
All right, well, thanks very much to
That's
both of you.
Lovely, Danielle. Thank you.
Danielle and Brenda, thanks a million to you both. You've been both so generous in talking to us and talking about your different experiences, and also for giving us that very hopeful insight into it. For anybody out there who's been listening to this who feels alone in suffering with alopecia, I hope that listening to Brenda and Danielle has helped you there. We'll take a break. We're back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Local issue, universal problem, you might say. We've been hearing from the Students' Union in Galway earlier about pressing flyers into people's hands, trying to get them to pledge a room so that somebody could rent it in their house and avail of the rent-a-room scheme for students. We also heard from our student who was recently successful in getting a room, and we also put the call out for people who are currently looking for rooms or considering renting to students. And we've had a bit of a response. Sinead O'Gorman, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Cormac. How are you?
You find yourself in the position of looking for accommodation for your daughter, is it? Starting next week in the University of Galway. So you're feeling the pressure.
Yeah, well, now we've gotten sorted. But so we live in North Wexford. So Galway is a bit of a trek away. And for first year, we were fairly lucky. We had entered the draw to register for campus accommodation, and my daughter got pulled out in the first round. So we knew around Easter time, before she did her leaving cert, that she had accommodation in Galway. So that was fine. That accommodation on campus, it was one of the newer buildings. That was about, it was just under €7,000 for the year. It was really, you know, really high end. It was a 6-bed apartment, and all ensuite bedrooms. And, you know, utility costs were very low, had a very high energy rating, etc. The campus accommodation, fairly enough, you know, they take first years, and from second year on, then, you know, you need to look for something off campus. So we knew, like, we'd need to start looking in kind of February, March, that's when the purpose-built student accommodation starts registering interest for the following year. So my daughter applied to about 5 of those places in February. She came out 986 on one waiting list, 1,100 and something on another, and then she didn't hear back even from some of the others. They don't let you know where you are. And around Easter time, it was around late April, herself and her friends, they were looking for accommodation, and they got an offer of a place. They're kind of an apartment building. They have a website. They advertise themselves as being student accommodation, even though they're not registered with the RTB as student accommodation. And they got offered an apartment with a double room and a single room. So she would have been sharing the room. It would have been €5,500 for the year to share the room. But they had to be out every Friday at 11 o'clock.
Right.
And they weren't allowed back in until Sunday, until 5 o'clock.
So similar to Ruin, who is coming from Waterford, saying, look, the Friday departure and a 6-hour trek back to Waterford and then a 6-hour trek back to Galway on Sunday night, just not really a runner.
Yeah. It's not really a runner, and I suppose you're hoping from at least after first year, you know, that they'd be settled in more and they wouldn't be travelling back so much.
Mm.
But what really galled me about these apartments was they were letting the apartments out for the weekend. So it wasn't like somebody renting a room in their house maybe and not wanting a student hanging around for the weekend. It was the fact that they were renting these apartments on booking.com for the weekend.
All right, so like this is not just leave for the weekend.
Yeah.
Like a student maybe in a house could leave their bag and baggage but this is clear out your possessions and...
Clear out everything, yeah. So I rang them and they were very evasive. They didn't want to talk to me because it was my daughter's friend who had put the name down and who had gotten the offer on behalf of the three of them. They didn't really want to talk to me. I kind of kept pressing. I said, do they need to remove everything? So like everything, if you had a poster on the wall, you'd remove all your clothes, all your bedding, and all your food from the kitchen. And I said, you know, do you have storage? And she said, well, some of them do, some of them don't. And I said, and what if you wanted to stay up for the weekend? What would you do? And she said, oh, you'd have to go on to booking.com and book your room for the weekend.
Right.
So they also... wouldn't allow a viewing until you had accepted the place and paid the deposit. So like the accommodation office in the university have very good kind of guidance on, you know, what to do and what not to do. And they very strongly say, you know, don't take a place if they're insisting on, you know, accepting a deposit before they let you see it. So we kind of said, no, that's like, it wasn't an option. And we kept looking. I was looking on StudentPad and I felt under pressure even in early summer, you know, that we needed to have found somewhere. And maybe the volume of rooms doesn't increase on StudentPad until kind of, you know, later summer. But we eventually found somewhere. Again, it's purpose-built student accommodation, right. And it's in the city centre.
7 days?
But like 7 days, but the cost of it is unbelievable.
Go
like it's €10,700 for the year for 8 months.
€10,700 for 8 months?
Yeah, nice. It's €1,263 per month. But I felt under pressure because we were so far away. We didn't have time to be trekking up and down. She couldn't have a plan B, really, being so far away. You know,
so you're basically, you're prepared to pay that premium to kind of, to make sure it's of a particular standard, because you don't really have the wherewithal to be tramping around doing all the viewings. Is that basically?
Yeah, it was just basically somewhere that was very decent and that you could stay 7 days was the main thing, and be with other students. You know, that was the main thing. But we just felt we're so far away. We couldn't be going up and down and looking over the summer. And all we heard, like in the news, like throughout the summer, was about the accommodation crisis in Galway. And just kind of felt, okay, we have this offer now. It was way more than we would have expected we'd have to pay, you know, in second year. I thought the campus was as expensive as we would go. But we just made the call in the end that we'd better take it, you know, better burden.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's more people out there in the same situation as yourself, Sinead. They can get us on 087-484-8888 on their WhatsApps or 51551 by text. We'll have more on this after the break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818-715-815.
Catherine Cody, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
You're a 6-year veteran of keeping students. Would you recommend it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, 200%.
Right.
I think a suggestion I would have for anyone that is contemplating it is to make one room in your house available and give it a go and see how it goes. My situation, I'm living at home, I'm retired, I'm living in Carlow, and I kept one young lady for a period of time. She returned a year later. And then after that, I kind of, as my rooms became available, I just kept, I keep girls, and it's been a very positive experience.
Right.
I think for anybody. Sorry.
And what are the ground rules in terms of access to the kitchen, you know,
curfew
for, noise at night and all of that kind of thing?
Oh, no. No, I have to be honest with you. I've been very, very lucky. My attitude to anybody staying in my house is make yourself at home. I have the heat on for myself. I have the internet on. I pay the bills. So by having young people in my house, there's no ground rules. The kitchen is available 24/7. Obviously, I prefer not going at 3 o'clock in the morning. But
right. That's
the sort of they're the sort of little things that you can discuss with prospective students when
guests,
they come to visit.
Guests Pardon? Staying over, is that allowed?
Not particularly, because I haven't got rooms, to be honest. And my approach to that is that if you've got a young lady who's coming to my house as a first-year student who has maybe possibly not been away from home before, you know, they want to have the freedom to use the bathroom upstairs and feel free, like they were at home, to walk from their bedroom around the house without having to be concerned of maybe meeting somebody in the kitchen or in the hall that they don't know.
Okay, and that's financially, you know, the advantages of it. They're up to 14,000, is it 14,500 tax-free?
Yes. It's a huge advantage because it doesn't create any issues if you're in the workforce. And as I say, it's a very nice income. Yes, you spend a little bit of money on your house preparing it and keeping it clean. You have options for young students to bring literally their own bed linen if they wish. I provide bed linen. Literally everything in my house is available to whoever comes and stays.
Okay. And are you full for the coming college year?
I am.
Oh, Catherine.
Well, I'm delighted, I needn't tell you. I actually have two young ladies. One is returning for her fourth year, having been here for the past 3 years, so to call it. And Sarah's coming back for her second year. So,
right.
You know,
that you'll be in bits when she leaves.
That people are absolutely devastation, and she comes the whole way from Cork.
All right.
So what can I say? But I do empathise with people because okay. I think it's very unfair. I think College Cribs is also a very good website for putting homes up there as well for access.
Okay, Catherine, thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you very much. Positive experience. We'll take another
wee break. We'll be back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Now, we were talking about alopecia earlier in the programme, and on the line is Roz Purcell, healthy living advocate, hiker, broadcaster. Roz, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks so much.
Good, and look, you're very good to take our call because loads of people texted in, and we heard from Danielle and Brenda earlier, both of them very public about alopecia and feeling the benefits of being public about it. How has it been for you?
Well, I first got it about 6 years ago. I actually started with losing my eyelashes. And then from then, it's just been patches. So I have alopecia areata, and they can range between the size of a golf ball to maybe a 2 euro coin. And there's really nothing I can do about it. They come whenever they want. I have gone to many doctors. And, you know, I think the hardest thing about alopecia is you can't control it. You don't really know when it's going to happen. And there's no really root cause of it. My only advice I have for people, and look, I've been very lucky that my own hair is very long and I haven't ever had a bald patch along my hairline, would be actually just finding an expert and finding what treatment works for you. While I haven't been able to find a cause, and I don't think anyone has alopecia, finding a treatment that works is really fundamental in making you feel, I suppose, that you can control it in some way.
Right. And did you know much about it beforehand? Because people are obviously have picked up on you being very public about it and talking about it. I mean, did you know of anyone who'd had it before?
Yeah, there's a girl called Amber Jean Rowan. And I used to model with her when I was younger, and she has alopecia. And I always followed her online, and she shared so much about it. And I absolutely just loved that she was a fantastic advocate for it. And she deals with hair loss all over her body. So that was someone that I could kind of look up to and get resources from. Now, mine's obviously very different because mine just comes in patches. But it's great to find someone online that has something similar to you.
Okay. Well, look, thanks for the busman's holiday of coming on air when you're not in the usual slot. It was great to have you. And thanks for talking
to
us about it. And obviously a lot of people picking up on what you've been saying as well.